family on Rose gratefully recovering compulsive overeater.
I wish I could just have a timer in my life. Someone just walk by me and just be like, you've got 10 more minutes for this task and you need to move on. You know, like, stop. Don't get caught up in this, Rose. You're going to waste your whole afternoon. Don't turn on that TV. You know, it's like, you've got 5 more minutes. You need to go to bed. Anyway, so I'm grateful to be here. It's awesome to be able to share some experience, strength, and hope in Overeaters Anonymous. And I'll tell you a little bit about where I come from and what I was like before I found this program. I started, the first time I remember food becoming a big thing was when I was about, I think it was my 5th birthday, and I, in the 70s when I was born, and I grew up in Manhattan and lived there until 7 years ago. When I moved out here, McDonald's was a big thing. There was only one of them, and it was like a special treat. And so when I would have my birthdays there, and they would have a puppet show, and there would be this big ice cream cake that was, you know, with Ronald McDonald on it. And I remember after that birthday, you know, going home. Oh, and I remember I loved the fact that it was my birthday because I could have both a cheeseburger and chicken nuggets on the same day. I got to order both. This was like a huge thing for me. And so we had our party and came home at night, and my mom would put the rest of the ice cream cake, which is what it was, in the freezer. And I remember that first birthday, I came out of my room at night. It was all dark. I was in my little nightgown, and I went to the freezer, and I got the big cake, and I got the big knife out, which I wasn't supposed to use, and I sawed off a big piece of this frozen ice cream cake, and I stood there in the kitchen eating the ice cream cake. And when I was done, I arranged the tinfoil in a way that I hoped no one would be able to tell that I had done this. And I washed the knife and dried it and put it back. And whatever it was like garbage, like I put it under the rest of the garbage. And I was 5 or 6. I mean, I was so young, you know. And it was like, that was the beginning for me of like, basically, as soon as I got into the food, I started to sneak and lie and steal. Not that it wasn't mine, but like when you're a kid, you know, you kind of have to ask your parents if you can have things, but that was never the thing with me and food. Like, I wasn't going to have to ask anyone for anything when it came to food. I was going to find my way to it. And whether that was stealing money to buy food, which I did throughout high school, my middle school, high school, from my mother, whatever money I could steal, I would, to buy food. Or I would steal food if I could get away with it. Or I would just sneak more than was like my share, you know. And that kind of stealing and sneaking and lying around food was a big part of the way that I ate. And I lied to other people and I lied to myself. So for instance, when I was older, if we were getting like takeout or, you know, whatever, it's like I would be the virtuous one who would say, oh, I'll put it on plates for us. And then I would go into the kitchen, eat like basically a whole portion, and then distribute the food and come out like as if there was, you know, totally innocent. And, you know, I very rarely ate in front of other people. I had maybe like one or two people in my life, maybe a few boyfriends, one girlfriend who could really see, like, I could really eat the way I wanted to in front of them, but mostly I was a closeted eater. So it's like people would say things like, I don't know why you're so heavy, you eat so healthy, you know, and they would see like, you know, it's a salad with grilled chicken or dressing on the side or sauce on the side. Everything was on the side, right? But when I left, it was like store to store, bag to bag, box to box, bring it all home, arrange it, shades down, TV on, phone off, let's go. And it was like eat until I couldn't stay up, basically, until I would pass out. I would, you know, just fall asleep. And then I would get up half hour later, an hour later, and I would go back to it. And very rarely was anything there the next morning. But once in a while, if it was, it was like, you know, so basically I'm like an addict with food. That's how I was, you know. So what is like, what are the traits of addiction? So the disease of addiction, as we call it in 12 steps, is two parts. The first part is physical, which means I have a physical compulsion that a certain food is going to trigger like a chain reaction in my body, where once I put it in my system, I cannot stop eating it. Certain foods and certain behaviors will do that. The other part of this disease is mental, which is that I will obsess about food. So even if I'm in a period like a diet period or a restriction, or I'm being good, I love that word, I'm being good, that my mind will always take me back to the place where like I can eat this food or I can eat this way, and next time is going to be different, and I'm going to show you how. Like, I'm going to beat this thing and I'm going to win, and I can control it. You know, and so it's both. So what happens is, no matter how long I have where I'm like good, or I'm on a diet, or I'm eating a certain way, eventually my mind will take me out. My mind, and this happened to me probably about 9 or 10 times in my life, where I lost somewhere between 40 and 60 pounds and then gained it all back, probably about 10 times in my life. And it would have been more had I not gotten abstinent at 29. So that's maybe, I was 30, so it's 15 years ago by the grace of God. So I can tell you that it would have been that and worse for the last 15 years if not for this program. Because I have a mind that tells me I can control it and I'm going to beat it. And I have a body that once it starts, it cannot stop. There is no, like, my body does not go like to 5. It goes to 11. It's like, if something feels good, I will, you know, do it until I've destroyed myself. Until it doesn't feel good anymore is really what it is. And that's really what addiction is. It's like, it's very seductive. It's like, come here, this is going to be good. This is going to feel good. Come on, you want this. And then, whammo. And then it beats the shit out of you, basically. And that's what happened. You know, eventually I got to the point where I was sick and tired of being sick and tired. I had been on every diet. I had been on every pill. And the truth is that really the bottom line was I hated myself. I hated myself because I couldn't control myself. I couldn't control what I was eating. And I felt like there was something very wrong with me. Like that, like I would say, like, what is, there's something wrong with me. Like, what is wrong with me? Why am I doing this? And I remember the moment when it really clicked for me. For some reason, I had gone on a date, and I had had a great time with this person. It had gone really well. And the date was over, and I was walking home, and the thought crossed my mind, I should get a little something to nosh on, you know, a little nosh. And before I knew it, I was surrounded by boxes and bags and containers, saying to myself, why did I do that? Like, how, like, I don't understand. Like, I just had this amazing date, everything was fine, I was feeling good. And now I literally am like I would like be beating the, what is this called? The coffee table. I'd be like beating the coffee table. Like, why did I do this? You know? And that's when I realized I'm not eating to overcome sadness. This isn't because, oh, I feel sad, I need some comfort. This is, I'm having any emotion and I need to medicate it. Like, anything. And that I have a craving that I cannot control. And it doesn't matter what is happening in my life, my answer is always going to be that food is going to be the solution. It's like, for me, the problem was whatever, or there was no problem, and the solution was always food. So I came to meetings, and I started coming to me. The first meeting I went to, I like ran. That was it. Like, I went to a meeting, I was like, no way. I went out and binged. It, like, I think I didn't come back for another 2 months or something. And then I went, I was lucky to have found a 100-pound winners meeting, this amazing Tuesday night meeting in New York. And I was absent in New York for many years before I moved out here. We have a lot of meetings there. And it was the first time I ever heard people sharing about things like going back into the garbage to get food or eating food that was frozen, not being able to wait until it cooked, or putting like ice cream in the microwave to like defrost it faster, or like getting into fights with people over food, or being ashamed, or being, you know, it was like, and laughing about it. And I was like, oh my gosh. And I remember that very first, that meeting I went to. So of course I had fancied myself a baker, which was just an excuse for like making stuff I could eat. And I had this Nigella Lawson cookbook, and I remember this one recipe for this chocolate cake. And under the serving size, she wrote, the serving size was one slice or the entire cake if you have a broken heart. And I remember in that meeting I shared 15 years ago, I must have had a broken heart my whole life because my serving size was always the entire cake. And it's like, it gives me, like, I have goosebumps, like, thinking about the woman that I used to be. You know, thinking about the way I was chained to food like that, that I had no, that I was hopeless. And that was the beginning of my journey in this program. You know, I got a sponsor. The sponsor told me I had to make 90 meetings in 90 days. One meeting a day, one day at a time for 90 days. And I was like, I'm very busy. And she's like, okay, no problem. Then you need to find a different sponsor. I'm not going to sponsor you. And I'm like, well, okay, fine. And, you know, that was like the best suggestion she could have given me, because it really got me entrenched in the program. And we started working the steps. And, you know, it turned out that she wasn't exactly the right sponsor for me. It just wasn't really fitting. So when I got to my fourth step, I was like, okay, I don't really feel safe with this woman. This isn't really going to work out. So I let her go, and I spent about 6 months without a sponsor, which I would not recommend. And on Christmas Eve, I was abstinent, but I almost binged. I could feel it. I didn't have a sponsor. I was still going to meetings. I had my friends in the program, but I wasn't working the steps. You know, I was stuck on step four. And I got on my knees in the bathroom at where I was at for Christmas Eve, and I prayed to God, if you keep me abstinent, I will get a sponsor. And the next morning I went to a meeting, Christmas Day, and this older lady shared that the obsession to eat had been removed and that she lived free from the bondage of food. And I was like, can you please be my sponsor? And she was like, no. And I was like, no. She said, I don't have space. And I was like, oh, okay. She said, but I'll take your phone number and let's be program friends. And I said, okay. Gave her my number. The next day she called me. She said, one of my sponsees just fired me. And she asked me a bunch of questions. She said, are you willing to go to any lengths for your recovery? Do you have a food plan, or are you willing to be on a food plan? Do you have a higher power, or are you open and willing to learn about a higher power? And of course I was desperate and I was willing to do anything, so I said yes. And I can tell you that she is my sponsor today, 15 years later. Whoa. So it's a big success story. This woman has been like the mother I never had. She's been like the sister I never had. I've been turning my food over one day at a time, every day for 15 years to her. No matter where I am, pretty much, even if I'm out of the country, you know, sending a text now. It didn't used to be. It used to be on the phone. She talked to me every night, 6 days a week for 20 minutes for the first, like, 8 years I was abstinent. It's unbelievable, this woman. And I can also tell you that for 3 years, I hated her. Not the first three, but about 8 years in, I was like done with her. I didn't want to turn my food over anymore. I was sick of it. It was this, you know, and I literally for 3 years, every time I called her, was like, I don't want to talk to this lady, you know, but I kept going because I knew it wasn't about her. that there was something that I was working through. Either she was telling me something I didn't want to hear, or it was my resistance, or my disease was coming up. And I just said, just keep going. I talked to everyone. What do you think? Should I keep turning over my food? I don't know. Well, what do you think about her? And, you know, whatever. You know, poll the audience. That's a big survival pattern of mine, to poll the audience. What do you think I should do? I don't do that anymore, by the grace of God. So anyway, I stuck with it, and it passed, it lifted, and we still have this very beautiful relationship. So what I'm like now, in 1 minute, so I do live free from the bondage of food. I can go anywhere and do anything, and I don't struggle with food. I have spent many years working on how I feel about myself. I came from a place of loving, of hating myself, like truly to my core. I can tell you I love myself truly to my core. I work on that daily, being able to love myself and approve of myself. I do that daily. It has been being able to observe what the thoughts are in the head, in this head, and then work to let go of the negative thoughts and to bring in prayers to replace them, and affirmations to shift the mind to the positive, and to be able to create a life that I want through feeling good and thinking thoughts that are loving has been like my life's work. It has been the main focus of my life for 15 years. It's not easy when you come from a place of truly to the core hating yourself and living with a 24/7 like stream of negative thoughts, which is where I come from. I don't live that way anymore. I can tell you that, bless you, for the most part, I am my own best friend, which means that for the most part, I treat myself the way I would treat my best friend, my sponsees, my daughter, a stranger in the street who I open the door for. You know, I come from a place of literally like not like being an acquaintance to myself, like not even, you know, barely being even cordial to a place of loving myself. And that has taken time, and it has taken abstinence, because if I was in the food, if I was hurting myself with food, I could not be working with what I do with my mind. So for me, you know, the food has to come first. Abstinence has to come first. And then we can work in all these other areas. I have been through, I mean, when you're abstinent for a long time, you go through a lot of life stuff. And, you know, I've been through all of it. You know, and I'm going to end up wrapping up here in a minute. But it's like both my grandparents died, and they were like the lights of my life, like what kept me alive. My mother died of this disease about 3.5 years ago. She had a massive stroke. And I had to buy the extra large coffin to have her cremated in, so it was $300 more. that's where she was at. She lost and gained 100 pounds in a food program twice, and she never did a fourth step. And that's the thing that I take away from her and her death, is she told me she wouldn't do a fourth step. So if you're, you know, for me that fourth step is really crucial to maintaining abstinence. My relationships have been the thing that has most changed, but also been the biggest struggle for me, coming from someone who was so isolated and protected. So I'm a single mother. I went through that. I'm raising my daughter entirely on my own for the last 4 years, 100%. And I just ended a almost 5-year relationship. And so I did that, plus I moved all the way across the country, plus I just, a little more than a year ago, I left my career of 20 years, where I had a really good, you know, very good job, to pursue what had always been my passion. And I literally, left a 6-figure career to like do it, and now I'm doing it and I'm 10 months in and I'm already pretty successful, especially in comparison to what other people are doing in this amount of time, but like I'm actually like doing really well, and I love it. So, you know, all that working through fear, making decisions based on recovery, that all comes from being abstinent and being a part of the program. You know, going to meetings, doing service, being connected, having a sponsor, just like all the tools. And so, you know, it's like the food is a big deal until you are abstinent, and then it's everything else. It's like the issue with the food is only an issue until it's not an issue anymore, and then we have a choice and a chance to like work on everything else in our life that we want to shift and change and grow in. And so I'm grateful that I've had this time to do that, and I look forward to, you know, many more 24 hours of being abstinent and seeing what life has for me. So thanks for listening.